Welcome back, everyone. This is the Bless You Boys podcast. Bless You Boys is your home on the SB Nation platform for all things Tigers baseball. I'm your host, Brandon Day. With me, as always, my co-host, or is almost always, my co-host, Ashley McLennan. Ashley, how's it going?
Not too bad. I think almost always is a pretty fair assessment.
Yeah, usually, you know, I mean, there are many demands on your time. Everybody wants you, and, you know, I'm just, sometimes I'm just stuck in my lonely corner here, like, somebody talk baseball to me.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I try, and usually I succeed. So here I am, episode 13. Lucky 13.
Yeah, we've made a solid commitment tonight to not talk about the Tampa Bay Rays at all, if possible. You never know, though. I mean, in the middle of the show, the Rays might do something. There might be a deal. Somebody's got to make some moves.
Some sort of Chris Archer, Colomate trade deal going down. No, I promise we won't do this.
Yeah, exactly.
So we got it out of our systems early. Now we'll carry on.
Yep. And, I mean, you know, there's just over 2 weeks left in spring training. The Tigers made a lot of cuts earlier this week. And so what we kind of figured we'd do tonight is kind of run through some of the roster battles that are going on and take them sort of position group by position group. So we're going to talk about those. We have a bunch of listener questions that we will get to. And there's probably a couple other little random topics that will come up along the way, but that's sort of the agenda tonight. Before we get going, I wanted to mention again that we have set up a Patreon site, and you can head over there to www.patreon.com/blessyouboys. And if you pledge to us and become a patron, we would greatly appreciate it. Basically, you know, anything you can do, there's a $1 level, $3 level, $5 level. You can go above that if you want to. That'd be awesome. We are kind of working out some tiers as to what kind of rewards will come with those. We're trying very hard not to do the thing where there's, like, constant insider content being put up on the Patreon page and you're not seeing it on the regular site. That's not going to happen, but we probably will do a few special features over there for people who donate at the $3 tier or above. Right now we're kind of figuring we're going to do a monthly minor league podcast, probably with me and Rob, and then maybe, you know, trying to bring in Chris Brown or some of the other sort of farm system experts that we know well. Emily Walden is probably going to be on the show in a couple weeks, and she might be another one that we'll try to bring on throughout the season. And then Rob is also thinking of doing a mailbag once a month where he takes all the patrons' questions and kind of does a Q&A with those. So those are a few of the, you know, kind of like the early ideas we've been batting around. We're still kind of trying to sort it out, and we are looking for ideas on that. You know, a lot of you are out on the internet all the time. You may know some other Patreons that you're a patron of, and if you've seen some, you know, kind of interesting content ideas or things that you can that we could do for you guys to make it worth your while to donate to us, that would be much appreciated. You can leave those comments on the podcast site. Bless you, boys. So yeah, that's kind of the deal.
Not to bombard it, and our mission is to stick with the one, three, and five levels. Like, we don't want to, like, be like, here's for, you know, $100 a month, we'll, like, write recaps from your house.
Right. Brandon will write a recap from your house and then paint it for you afterward. Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we can do my, like, stream of conscience recaps, and I'll do them from your house out loud.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that sounds great.
$100 month level.
Yep. Readings of your latest novel and stuff like that.
For $50 a month, I will just sit at your house and tweet all day. Some really exciting stuff we got coming up there.
Yeah, insider content right there.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's the Patreon. Feel free to do that if you would like. We'd appreciate it. We do have some, you know, some thoughts about, you know, trying to come up with contests and things like that, which we've done in the past on the site, but haven't really been able to do so much in the past year or so. You know, if we get a lot of support there, that would help on that front as well. So I'll throw that out there, and yeah, feel free to do what you will or not, and that's perfectly fine either way. We really appreciate everyone listening. The rebooted podcast has gotten a pretty good reception so far, and we're pretty thankful for that. So we are listening to you guys. We do want your criticism, your suggestions, your unadulterated praise and worship. All of those things are good. We'll accept all of them.
You speak for yourself. I just want the praise. I'm on Twitter at 90 feet from home. Please, please come tell me how much you love me. No other comments are welcome.
Yeah, everything else will get you banned and blocked.
Everything else can be directed to Brandon.
Yeah, feel free. Bring it on. I can take it. It's all right. I'm having a good night because, as I was telling Ashley, I was just actually chatting with young Mr. Daniel Norris about Japanese woodblock printmaking, and kind of suggesting some places he could go. He could kind of go to further his interest in that subject, and he's just an interesting guy that way, because I've actually suggested a few things like that, and Daniel will usually write you back if you're nice and have something, you know, you want to point out. He's a guy of many interests, so yeah, that was kind of cool. It's always nice when you can kind of connect with a player a little bit and talk to him about something other than baseball, so that was fun.
He is a man of many complex and deep interests.
I almost wonder if Daniel isn't, like, maybe too smart to be a baseball player deep down.
He's just maybe got too much going on in his head to, like, you know, sometimes he'll get out to the mound and he'll be thinking about, like, yeah, I wonder if that portrait I took last week is going to turn out, and should it have been better if I did it in color, and, you know, meanwhile... Just focus and throw the ball.
I know. He's thinking about a homeless person he helped out in Washington and took some pictures of and stuff like that, and worrying about him. Yeah, I don't know.
Opening a free sandwich shop or something. Like, I think maybe as wonderful as that is, he might just be slightly too complex for the sport.
Yep, I love it though. Yeah, he's definitely not your average cat out there throwing the ball. So yeah, we're gonna be rooting hard for him. And so far, he's having a nice spring. He looks really good. So. We'll get into that a little bit more when we get to the debate between starting pitching and the bullpen roles that are slowly being decided. So, and I have thoughts on that matter. So,
I'm sure you do.
So yeah, let's do a quick rundown here. Rob Rojacki, our managing editor, put an article up on the site today, kind of about the cuts that went on yesterday, and there were quite a few guys that were kind of sent on different assignments. I know Mike Gerber was sent to AAA Toledo, and I think there were 11 players total cut from Major League Camp. Jake Rogers, I believe, was sent down to... where was he sent? Double A?
Actually, he was Double A, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And, so Eduardo Jimenez is going to High A Lakeland. He was dominant last year for the Whitecaps, despite a suspension kind of early in the season. Had a great year, so that's no surprise that he would step up a level. Sandy Baez and Victor Alcantara heading to Double A Erie. One listener did ask a question that I'll just hit right now. He was kind of mentioning, like, which guys that were sent down would you rather have seen stay in camp? And probably the number one guy I had in mind was Sandy Baez, just because I think Sandy Baez could probably become a reliever right now, and I think there's still a lot of there's a lot of work to be done for him to be able to be a starting pitcher and utilize three pitches regularly. He's a guy who I would kind of like to have seen a little bit deeper into camp, especially as he'd start facing more complete lineups. And you know, we'll see how it goes this year for Sandy. He might actually, I could see him getting called up. You know, the Tigers had to add him to the 40-man, I think it was two years ago, to protect him from the Rule 5 draft. So he's getting a little long in the tooth for an international signing. At some point, they're going to need to get him up and start using him. But, it looks like they're going to send him back down to Double-A, see how he does there. There's probably some things Chris Bosio and he have worked on this spring that they want to see if he can implement. But don't be surprised to see Mr. Baez come back sometime this year in a relief role.
Possibly. Oh, yeah, especially with, like, the pretty thin depth that the Tigers have right now in relief. I wouldn't be surprised to see a bunch of these guys that we've seen in spring camp make appearances this season.
Yep, definitely. And there's, you know, and a lot of times teams end up using 10 or more starters during a year, and we don't really have that much depth there. So, yeah, it's entirely possible. You never know. The Tigers have said they don't want to call up Franklin Perez or Bo Burrows this year. They don't want to push them that hard, but you never know. You know, in a pinch, if one of them's going really well, it might not be a bad time to make their major league debut for a start and then go back down. You can control their service time without any trouble, even if you do that. So if they're doing well anyway, so yeah, we might see that. And then let's see, some of the minor league, the non-roster invitees were cut from camp, but they haven't been assigned anywhere yet. Enrique Burgos, who kind of banged himself up, it sounded like yesterday. Kevin Comer and Mark Montgomery, who were both minor league free agent reliever signings, who haven't really done that much in camp. And then, as we said before, catchers Arvicent Perez and Jake Rogers have both been sent down. Rogers going to Double A Erie, and maybe Perez, along with Grayson Griner, who is going to Toledo, they might both be the tandem there. But we'll just have to see what the Tigers do with kind of their excess, because they're still Brian Pena, there's still Derek Norris.
Yeah, Pena, I feel like they may even transition into a coaching role. Like, It's hard to say, but you know, the Tigers do love to give jobs to their former catching staff. Like, just look at Gerald Laird's coaching. What is he, double A coach, or is he high A?
I can't remember because they switched them all around this year.
Yeah, off the top of my head, because they did make so many changes, but I know he is in the Tigers system as a manager. And I feel like even if you put Peña in as like your standard, your bullpen catcher or so, they're going to find a place for him, but I don't feel like it's going to be a place where we see him much in action in the game.
Yeah.
But I feel like they're going to try to find some role for him just because he is such a kind of a beloved figure. And he even said earlier in camp that he was feeling a lot more of that mentorship role, which it kind of harkens to that whole Mike Pelfrey thing where he was saying that he was feeling a lot of that and then kind of got pushed into retirement as a result. So yeah, I think you could see something like that happen with Peña this season, where they find some sort of a player coach role for him that's really just a coaching gig.
Yeah. Even you know, even if they have Griner and Perez at AAA, you can have three catchers there, especially if one of them is there kind of more, like you said, to kind of just shepherd the younger guys, teach them some of the finer points, especially working with the catchers and pitching staff. So,
well, where do you think Saltalamacchia makes the team now that he's back as a minor league signing instead of somebody like Peña? Like, he's not, obviously he was never great when he was with the team, but where do you see it? Like, do you see a Derek Norris getting the shot over Salty, or do you see Salty having been brought in so that the Tigers could kind of lean away from Norris?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Derek Norris has really struggled behind the plate, like his defensive skills, which used to be, you know, reasonably good. He just doesn't look sharp at all back there. He's been kind of a mess, actually, and there's really never been enough with the bat to keep him around if he's not doing a good job behind the plate. So, I mean, right now it really feels like John Hicks is kind of the guy to be the backup.
I think it's his to lose for the major league level.
Yeah, I mean, they've been singing his praises pretty strong. You know, Hicks hasn't necessarily been that impressive a defensive catcher either, but he has improved a good bit. It does seem like he's worked really hard on it over the past year since we've got our paws on him. And, you know, the dude can hit compared to, you know, Derek Norris, compared to probably what you're going to see from Jared Saltalamacchia. I'd much rather have Hicks there. You can kind of spot him in at first base for Miggy. So that's flexibility.
What I like, that he has that first base experience, and he did well last year in those spot first base starts. So
yeah, exactly. Like a lot of the advanced stats will tell you he was lucky to a fairly high degree last year. But even without that, he was still swinging the bat pretty well. So yeah, it seems like he'd be the guy. And you know, I assume like Saltalamacchia they kind of just added because all these guys were hanging out over at the spring camp, which was about to close, and it was just kind of like, well, you know, we know him. You know, let's bring him over and just see how he's looking and stuff. I it's hard to imagine they're going to do anything with him other than put him at AAA for depth in place of Peña. I don't think Norris is making the team at this point. And obviously, you know, there are plenty of reasons not to be upset if he's sent packing. So
yeah, that's correct.
Yeah,
I
know you'll be upset. So yeah, I mean that pretty much, you know, covers the catcher spot at the moment. It doesn't really seem like anybody else is really going to challenge Hicks at this point. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe Saltalamacchia's got more in the tank than I think he did. But when he was healthy, the one year we had him, he was good for a couple weeks, and then he just seemed to wear down almost instantly. So,
yeah, there was nothing terribly inspiring that season aside from a couple of really good, like, clutch moves that he made. But definitely nothing to warrant him being a standard backup catcher, that's for sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see how that goes. I mean, it's James McCann's job. We did get to see Jake Rogers quite a bit, and I have to say, like, Jake Rogers looks so damn good behind the plate. I'm almost tempted to just have him called up this year. Watching him lead Joe Jimenez the other day, when Jimenez struck out the side, I think against the Mets, I want to say. I can't remember exactly if it was the Mets, but, you know, he just led him beautifully. And the two of them looked like they were working really well together. So it was pretty easy to see what the Tigers see in Jake Rogers as a defender, especially.
Yeah, I'm excited to see more of them.
Yeah, definitely. So, all right, let's move on to the bullpen where, I mean, we basically have Shane Green and Alex Wilson locked in. So that's two of the seven guys. And I think you can pretty much lock in Daniel Stump because Chris Bosio has been just raving about him. He's having a nice spring. So that's three guys, and then they've decided that they're going to move Buck Farmer finally to a bullpen role, and I would assume Buck Farmer does, oddly enough, have an option left just because of some weird kind of rule thing about the way the Tigers used his service time. But
so does Blaine Hardy, right? Blaine Hardy still has an option left.
I think he does. Yeah, Drew Verhagen doesn't. So that kind of gets you, you know, Green, Wilson, Stumpf, Buck Farmer, probably Drew Verhagen, who's having a nice spring for the most part, and has been striking guys out a little bit more and is still kind of vaguely showing some signs with the slider and stuff.
He looked good on Tuesday. He had a really nice, like, three up, three down out inning, so.
Yeah, didn't he go through, I think he went through the heart
he
of the
went
Yankees
through the big
order.
Boys.
Yeah.
He got through through Sanchez, Stanton, and Judge. One, two, three.
Yeah, struck a couple out, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, so that's good. I mean, I've always, I don't know, this has kind of been an ongoing point of discussion today, but I've always kind of been a Drew Verhagen non-believer because I just hate his curveball and just didn't really feel like he has a major league breaking ball. But he started working on a slider last year that was kind of blunt at first, but the couple times I've seen him has looked a little better this spring. And so there's still a chance. He had that thoracic outlet surgery, I think it was 2016, so he's not that far removed from it, so there's still kind of a chance that there might be a little bounce back for him. And if he's got that slider, you might have something there. So we're at five there. That's five relievers, I think you can pretty much guarantee. And then it seems like you would take Hardy, doesn't it?
I think you would under normal circumstances. Hardy hasn't been fully healthy this spring yet. Like, he's had some issues, and we haven't seen much of him, or any. Have we seen Hardy in a game yet?
Nope, hasn't pitched yet. So he's obviously not going to start with the team. But
So, part of me thinks that you're going to see him start the season in AAA because he's got the option. And then you'll absolutely see Blaine Hardy pitch in relief this year for the Tigers. Like, there's no question about that at all.
Yeah.
So yes, Blaine Hardy makes the team. He'll be in your 40 man, but he'll still start the season in Toledo.
Yeah, I think that's true. Just kind of let him ramp up and see how it goes. The thing about that is that, okay, so there's two spots without Blaine Hardy in there, and they don't have another lefty really available. It really feels like Ryan Carpenter, who I believe was sent to AAA today, and has had a really nice spring, but he's a starter, and it kind of feels like, especially with them converting Buck Farmer to relief, they really need Carpenter at AAA. They're gonna need someone to come in and take some starts.
Yeah.
So, and maybe they don't care. Maybe I haven't looked at the schedule enough to see what kind of lefty heavy lineups they might be facing right out of the gate, but maybe they'll just not worry about that and just go with just Stump as their lone lefty and kind of make it work otherwise. And then so those two final spots, and I mean I have to think Joe Jimenez, who is having a nice spring and has made a few changes to his repertoire, which I'll have an article about on the site tomorrow, is looking pretty good, and you know they want him in there. At some point this year, they're going to really need Joe Jimenez because you have to assume, you know, Shane Green's getting traded. Probably Alex Wilson, if he's having a good year, is going to end up getting traded at the deadline, and this bullpen could just be god-awful.
Yeah.
So they're really going to have to depend on Joe Jimenez to try to pick it up this year.
I would agree with you there. I think that you see him come up. I think, based on what we've seen out of him this spring, he's going to do better than he did last year for sure. It was such a shame last year because he did so well in the World Baseball Classic. Like, he was just shining through those games. And then he came on, and we were expecting that level of performance at the big leagues, and it just kind of faltered.
Yeah.
And I think the bummer of that is, had we not seen him do so well in the WBC and seen those, like, beautiful little glimmers of amazingness, that we would have been like, oh, okay, the kid's just having a rocky start. But instead it was like, oh, who is this person that's body swapped with Joe Jimenez? So
yep.
Hopefully we see a little bit more of the WBC Jimenez and a little less of the 2017 Tigers Joe Jimenez.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, and maybe just having that year to kind of let the hype burn off. We were so starved for prospects to even pay attention to who might get to the major leagues that Joe Jimenez probably got an inordinate amount of attention because we really did need a bullpen arm. So maybe this year he can kind of fly under the radar. He's a pretty intense cat. Maybe he put a little too much pressure on himself last year and was kind of overthrowing because reports from almost anybody I talked to said that his stuff just didn't look the same as it did in 2016 when he just kind of burned his way through the entire minor league system. So, yeah, and he's looked much better this spring. So, yeah, I mean, you got to think they want him, you know, to have the time to kind of sit back there in like the fifth or sixth, you know, role or spot in the bullpen and just be able to pitch and, you know, have his bad days and his good days and kind of learn to work through it. So I would assume he's getting taken along, which leaves just one spot. And that's the tricky spot. Like, who is left to take that really intrigues? You know, there hasn't really been too many other guys really standing out out of the pitching staff.
Well, but, Brandon.
Yeah, break it down.
Did you know that Phil Koch was at camp yesterday?
I did know that. Mr. Fennec of the Free Press mentioned that. Yeah, Phil Koch was apparently showed up to camp yesterday just to hang out and say hi to everybody. Don't worry.
I'm sorry.
No subtext.
At least 100 people listening to this right now. Phil Koch will not pitch for the Tigers next season. Rest easy, everyone. That was mean of me. I'm sorry.
I know. I mean,
Phil Koch was at camp yesterday, though, but he was not there to play or to pitch for a job.
Yeah, it would have been nice just to have him in camp, just to kind of see what he's got with this knuckleball and stuff, and mainly just to have Phil Koch around. You know, it wouldn't hurt anything. Wouldn't be burning a roster space on him. Yeah, the Tigers should hire Phil Koch to, you know, kind of be like a PR guy, and maybe he throws BP and save some of these older coaches' arms from having to throw batting practice every day.
Yeah, I would love for something to happen with Phil Koch on the team. Him and Pena can be like this 1-2 punch of like adorable, cheeky awesomeness, and they can just make promo videos hyping the CE team. They don't have to play. Koch can just do his awesome Miguel Cabrera impression. And that would be it. I would be happy with that.
I mean, what more do you need? Yeah, what more do you need from the guy than the Miguel Cabrera impression?
Yeah, exactly. That's all I ask for.
Yeah, that would be more than enough for me.
He can pop fly and point at it.
Yep.
That'd be his job.
The pop fly indicator. Phil Koch.
Absolutely. I love it.
You'd have a special little uniform and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like it. And so, yeah, I mean, obviously Phil's not going to be around.
Sorry, I've derailed the conversation slightly, but no, Phil will not be the last slot used for the Tigers bullpen, but I'm sure you have an idea of who will be.
Yeah, well, I honestly don't, because the real question is whether or not there's too many starters right now, with Francisco Liriano apparently penciled in as a starter after two appearances for, you know.
So my question is, apparently, I don't know how they deal with the Daniel Norris situation. Like, based on everything I'm reading, Norris kind of seems to be the odd one out in the rotation, because the lock seems to be, especially with Liriano now being kind of guardy favorited, you got Zim for sure, Fulmer, Fiers. I'm going to have to learn how to pronounce his last name before the season starts.
It is Fiers, isn't it?
Isn't it Fiers?
I believe so.
Yeah, probably. Fiers. And it's not a hard-looking name to pronounce, but I managed to fuck it up every time. Fulmer, Zimmerman, Fiers, Liriano, and Boyd, judging by the way things have gone this spring. And Norris kind of seems to be the one that they're not giving the starts to, that they're pushing into that relief role. And even though Bosio says that he's not shaping up to be a reliever, like, he's explicitly said he's meant to be a starter. But do you start him in the bullpen, like the major league bullpen, to start the season until Hardy is better and can come back? Or do you start him in AAA, where he can get reps as an actual starter and kind of like work his stuff out at a lower level? That's my question about Norris.
Yeah. Yep. And the thing is, you know, Norris has actually outpitched just about everybody. Spring training numbers don't mean that much, but, you know, I think Daniel Norris has one walk and 10 strikeouts at this point. I could be a little bit off. I looked the other day and the Tigers website is being weird at the moment, but he's definitely outpitched most of them. Mike Fiers has had a really tough.
I know
he's had a really tough start. You know, Liriano's looked pretty good, but you know, he's only had a couple outings. Fulmer's a lock no matter what. Boyd, you just get the feeling they like him. And he's also, you know, the thing is, he's doesn't have any more options left, so he's kind of got to be there. I've kind of advocated for Boyd to go to the bullpen in the past, much more than Norris, because Norris kind of has a more complete, deep repertoire of pitches. But I can understand them wanting Boyd in there. But it's really annoying to think that Daniel Norris might actually get left in Toledo. Like, if there's one thing that would really make me fly off the handle, it would be if they... I mean, I don't really want them to go to the bullpen either, but we've seen some success, and Bosio has actually had some success in the past, having guys pitch in relief for a little while, kind of get their feet under them and their confidence going, and then moved them back to the rotation, and it's gone well. So, I mean, if they decide to try to do that, I won't completely freak out. It's just suboptimal, especially with Fires, you know, kind of looking rough and coming off of a couple of, you know, consecutive rough seasons. So, yeah, you know, at that point, you kind of figure Daniels either got that last spot, but then there's also Warwick Saupold, who was pretty steady last year, and, you know, he's a guy that the Tigers seem to kind of like as a middle innings guy who can pitch you two or three innings when needed. And then there's also Johnny Barbato, who has had a pretty nice spring as well. Isn't really striking guys out, but has had the sinker going and hasn't really been hit hard at all. So they have some options, but that last spot is kind of where the starting rotation and the bullpen roles are kind of going to collide there.
Yeah.
And, you know, they could keep Saupold in the minor leagues. They could stretch him back out to start, which might be wise, because having Ryan Carpenter down there, and I don't really know who else, is kind of unnerving. Not sure what else we've really got to offer down there, but, you know, with Farmer not in the rotation anymore, and, you know, we've got Jordan Zimmerman's dad Neck, we've got Fires and Liriano, who are both older pitchers.
Yeah.
You know, Fulmer's coming off the surgery, although he's apparently fine. So, yeah.
I mean, that's always touch and go, right? They always say they're fine at the start of the season. So we'll see and we'll hope. I mean, I'm not trying to wish that anybody coming back from any kind of arm surgery is never a sure thing.
Yeah. Yep, for sure. You know, Daniel Norris, I think, spent 80 or 90 innings at AAA in 2016 and pitched really well there. And it was very frustrating. It was just very frustrating to see those innings for a guy who's already had success at the major leagues get spent on the Mud Hens' behalf. So we're going to have to see how that shakes out. I guess there's really nothing to do but trust that Chris Bosio knows what he's doing and that he's the one they're listening to. So we'll just kind of have to ride with it, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I think no matter what, we're going to be annoyed at something that happens with the pitching staff this season.
Oh, guaranteed. Guaranteed. I'm already annoyed. We haven't even started.
I know, it's just a matter of how soon it happens, and it could be by next week for Brandon.
Yep, exactly. All right, so let's move on to the outfield, where I think, you know, coming into camp, it kind of seemed pretty certain that it was just going to be Leonis Martin. It was going to be Victor Reyes kind of as the backup center fielder and maybe filling in the corners with Nick Castellanos in right, Mikey Matuk in left. But yep. Mr. Reyes hasn't really done anything this spring, has looked very unimpressive to me. You know, swings the bat reasonably well as a left-hander, but still kind of looks really overmatched and kind of awkward from the right side, and just hasn't really gotten anything done. Meanwhile, Jacoby Jones is just wrecking shop.
Yeah, he's had a really impressive spring so far.
Really has.
He's really out there, I think, trying to earn himself that job. And the problem is that he was also really good last year in spring training.
Yep.
So that's where my worry with Jacoby Jones lies, and that he's done this before where you're like, oh, shit, there's our center fielder of the future. And then he hits, what, like 179? I'm making that number up, but it's pretty close to reality. Like, so I'm hesitant. But, I mean, he's a young kid. I don't see a problem with giving him the job to give him a shot at it. He would only be, like, backfill for the regular players.
Yeah.
So I'm pro Jacoby.
Yeah, I mean, it's just tricky because, you know, you want Jacoby Jones to have the time to hit. I can't remember if it was, I don't want to disparage one of the beat writers, but someone said, no, I know who it was. I believe it was Pat Caputo from 97.1 The Ticket, who I would call out specifically for saying that Victor Reyes has a lot more upside than Jacoby Jones, which is just pure nonsense. And the problem there is that Jacoby Jones has way more power potential, way more speed. He's a way better defender than Reyes. He does everything better than Reyes except make contact, which is, of course, an important part of the game. And so Jacoby Jones probably needs the at-bats. And that kind of leads to you kind of tending to want to leave him in Toledo where he can play every day, maybe get his momentum going, and then get called up. Whereas Reyes, you know, the Tigers took him in the Rule 5 draft, first overall, and if they decide not to roster him, he goes back to the Diamondbacks, or at least is offered. So they're probably not going to want to do that. They're going to want to see this kid play a little bit. And the kind of the third way solution to that kind of bleeds into the utility infielder kind of roster battle, which is that the fact that Jacoby Jones came up as a shortstop and played third base quite a bit as well. And it was the Tigers who really converted him into a center fielder, where he's been brilliant. So there is the option, because, you know, Nico Goodrum, Pete Cosma, Ronnie Rodriguez, none of these guys have really done anything to impress anyone. I suppose you could play Jacoby Jones and kind of mix him at second base and shortstop to a degree, and maybe even third base, and then give him some starts in the outfield as well. And maybe you can piece together, you know,
just a super utility him.
Yeah, and, you know, you might be able to piece together half a season of at-bats for him. But to start the season, I probably wouldn't do that. I probably would leave him at Toledo as well and kind of see if he can kind of carry the spring momentum into the season. And if he can, I'm ready to punt Victor Reyes aside already and just install Jacoby in center field, platoon him with Leonis Martin, and then just use him wherever else you can. So, yeah, that's going to be an interesting one. You know, Jacoby Jones probably isn't – he's not really good enough as a shortstop to play every day. I'll throw that out there. But playing third base, second base, shortstop, if he's kind of moving around and only doing it occasionally, he's got the range, he's got the arm, his hands are good, but not shortstop good. So he can probably hang it out there for a part-time kind of job, but we'll just have to see if that's something they're really considering. You know, they've been talking about versatility. I know Chris Bosio was talking about how bummed he was that Travis Wood got hurt, because he can kind of do multiple things. He can pitch a late innings role and kind of hold a lead for you. He can pitch three innings in the middle of a game to save the bullpen. He can take a start when he needs to. The Tigers do seem to at least be kind of paying attention to the idea of versatility a little bit more. So
Jacoby Jones, that's huge for them, instead of the typical, like, he is my seventh inning guy, he is my loogie. Like, I like that they're at least considering stepping outside of the box of, like, paint by numbers, which is nice. I'm kind of bummed about Travis Wood. Like, we never got to see much of anything from him. I don't think he would have dazzled or anything, but what a shitty situation for him.
Yeah, you just hate. Yeah.
You show up to camp with your finger half off, but you're ready to go, and then you tear your ACL a week later.
Yeah, basically in a rundown. Like, necessarily doing anything crazy, so... Yeah, that sucks. There's nothing worse than spring training injuries. You just hate it. Doesn't matter if it's another team. I hate seeing young pitchers blow their elbow out in the spring and anything else. I'm just watching the Seattle Mariners just slowly just being whittled away before the season even begins with injuries.
Oh yeah, it's rough. They're the Mets of the spring training season this year.
Yeah, and then they kind of have been too. Like, it just kind of just always seems to bite them, the way, you know, Paxton keeps getting hurt. I'm totally blanking. Robinson Cano. Robinson Cano struggled last year. He's hurt already. Nelson Cruz, I think, is a little banged up. King Felix took a line shot off his elbow and hasn't pitched for, I think, almost 2.5 weeks now. Excuse me. So, yeah, it's just rough. You hate to see that happen.
Yeah, it's spring training is tough, and it feels like we've seen more injuries this season than I've seen in previous years, but that's probably one of those, like, gifts of hindsight where I forget how bad it's been in previous seasons, but it feels like it's been really bad this year.
Yeah, the recency bias can kind of bite you, but it does kind of feel like there have been quite a few just from the start. You know, it usually seems like it's the last week when guys ramp up that ligaments start just exploding spontaneously all across the league, but hopefully we can avoid that this year. So that kind of covers the roster. You know, the next 2 weeks are kind of going to be all about, you know, those couple decisions that the Tigers have to make. Who's going to get that last bullpen spot? Who's the odd man out in the rotation? We kind of figure Hicks has got catcher.
We really didn't talk about middle infield, like about the infield, but it's really not a lot of surprises there. You'll have Candelario at third. You'll have Iggy at shortstop. You'll have Machado at second base and Miggy at first, so that's not a lot of question marks there.
Yeah, there's one more spot for a utility guy, and, you know, really at this point, like, it seems like it's probably Ronnie Rodriguez.
Yeah, absolutely.
Goodrum hurt himself today. I think he had kind of a little bit of a shoulder issue. It's probably nothing major, but that just kind of, you know, kind of puts him even a little bit further down the pecking order. Pete Cosma, you know, doesn't really have much to offer. Still a good defender. I wouldn't be shocked if they went with Pete Cosmo over Ronnie Rodriguez either. And that would save us the flashbacks of seeing Ronnie Rodriguez, you know, kind of stance and its horrifying resemblance to that of Mike Aviles. But he's a different player, different guy entirely, so I'll just try to block that out. But yeah, that's one of those spots where I haven't really seen anybody do anything enough to warrant, like, oh, this is my job. And obviously they can't bring Sergio Alcantara with them because he needs to stay in the minor leagues and hit probably if Lakeland, maybe Double A this year, but he's still a ways away. So, in general, like who has stood out to you this spring though? It's kind of like one or two of the guys who really stood out and had a nice spring and made an impression to you.
Rogers, I keep circling back to. He's looked really good. Jacoby Jones has looked great.
Yeah, Jacoby Jones has drawn walks this spring. That's the big one. Like if he can keep that going, that would be it. So.
God, it's been such a boring spring training for me. It's really hard to, and it's been tough too, because I can't listen. We've had this discussion too. I can't listen to games at work. So it's whenever I happen to be able to catch one on TV. And last time I mentioned this, about 16 people tweeted at me that the game was on TV the day that it was. So I really appreciate that system, guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Ever so much for tweeting the TV schedule at me.
Well, and they keep changing their mind too. Like it's not scheduled. And then all of a sudden it's on TV and everybody's like, oh, it's on TV.
It's great. I super duper appreciate it. Yeah. Rogers has looked really good. I haven't been dazzled much by starting pitching. Verhagen looked great today, but that's one game. So it's hard to get really amped about that. Zimmerman looked great today, which gives me a little bit of the warm, fuzzy hopefuls. Miggy hasn't looked like hot trash, which is awesome. With a grain of salt, he hasn't hit any home runs in spring training yet, but he also hasn't been limping his way around the base paths, and he's showing some patience out there, and he looks like he's trying to improve himself before he, pushes too hard.
Yeah.
And for me, I think that's really important for a guy coming off of a back injury where he spent the entire season injured. I'd rather him be patient now and just watch the at-bats and see what these guys have rather than swing for the fences when the games don't matter.
Yeah. Yeah, and the one thing that back issue really did to him last year is he just seemed to be really, he was stiff, obviously, and just couldn't use his legs. He's just reaching for balls, at the bottom of the strike zone and just kind of utilizing a almost complete upper body swing to kind of drive the ball. And he has looked better on that front this spring.
Even on the base pass, he has shown some hustle, which is, shocking.
Yep.
And it's really nice to see. It's making me real happy.
Yep, he's definitely looking healthier. He seems, in more kind of Miggy spirits in general. And I have seen him, smoke a couple line drives to the wall. He ripped a double to clear the bases when we had the bases loaded the other day. So, yeah, there have been some big hits, and he's hitting the ball reasonably hard. We just kind of have to see if he can kind of get his timing down and his leg drive down to drive the ball in the air again. Because, if he's Miguel Cabrera, the way the ball is flying, you just never know. I mean, it's just so hard to know what to expect. I mean, he could hit 40 home runs, or he could be injured all year and hit 15. So, it's just kind of just stay healthy. I mean, I think that's all we're looking for him for, and he's done that. What do you think about Victor so far? Who's swung the bat great?
I'm in the last season, especially towards the end of last season, I was not big pro Victor. I had a lot of issues with, I think, some of the attitude. I was also really worried about his health. You don't want to see a guy forcing himself out there with a heart condition. And I think there was a small part of me that was just like, maybe his doctor just says, don't come back. And I would have been okay with that. But he's had a good spring. And, I joked the other day because somebody was saying that he always hits a home run when his dad's in the park. I was like, well, what's his dad doing for the rest of the season?
Yeah.
We could just get him an apartment and have him follow the team around. But no, it's I don't know what's changed. I don't know if it's something in how he's playing or if he just really wants to show that he's meant to be there. I hate being that person that brings up the intangibles, right? He had some real hustle. That heart and hustle thing it's so cliched, and it's not the same thing as mechanics at all. But I've been seeing a lot of guys out in spring training on the Tigers and on other teams where you can just taste how bad they want to be on that team.
Yeah.
And it plays. But my issue with that sort of intangible is that what happens once you're on the team?
Mm-hmm.
Like, right. Does Victor go back to being last season's Victor when he... I mean, Victor knows he's got the job, but does he stop caring as much when he actually starts playing? And that's my only worry.
Yeah. To me, I'm not too worried about that because I really think that was kind of a combination of the injuries, you know, the pressure on the team, and maybe just, you know, I mean, it's just hard. This is always hard for young, older players. You know, you see a guy like Carlos Beltran handle it really gracefully over the past two seasons, but a lot of guys don't. You know, Victor has kind of always been regarded as a kind of hard-driving, hard-working leader on any team, you know, a really good clubhouse guy. And I have to think that, you know, constantly having to go in, you know, and work with the physical therapist, the massage guys, the trainers, to just get himself on the field and able to, like, hit off the tee and get ready for the game, you kind of end up separated from your teammates. And especially as the Tigers have kind of started to trend younger, you know, some newer guys have come in over the past few years. It's pretty easy to start feeling alienated and like your day is done and to have some frustration with that. So, you know, the Tigers have said, you know, and I believe it was, I believe Alavila actually did come out and directly address this, that they had, you know, kind of sat down with Victor and talked to him about, you know, about those kind of things, and that he was just going to have to accept, you know, that he might not, you know, he might not be the everyday DH, you know, they might use him however they want to use him at this point. And he seemed to accept that, and you'd really hope that, you know, Victor, and I think he will just kind of look at this as, you know, his final year, his chance to leave a good impression before he goes out. You know, with the heart issue he had last year with the irregular heartbeat, that's the kind of thing that can creep up on a guy and really be a detriment to him, you know, long before they even kind of recognize and diagnose it. So it's hard to know, you know, if he's going to be substantially healthier. But so far he's swinging the bat well. And the thing I'd point out to people who are kind of sitting out there like, oh God, you know, are you guys going to promote Victor to us as our savior? We both will tell you that Victor Martinez is going to be almost impossible to trade, even if he's having a good first half. But the thing you have to look at last year is that, you know, the contact he made and the ability to draw walks and not strike out were pretty well undiminished last year. He just couldn't drive the ball in the air. That's really what it came down to. The shift, you know, was really cutting into his batting average and his on-base percentage. And he just wasn't getting the pitches and recognizing the pitches to turn and drive out of the park. And you just never know. You know, 2014 was a weird season because a lot of us kind of thought he was semi-washed up then, and he just, you know, he just dialed into the pitches he needed to see that year and just crushed home runs left and right. So I'm not going to predict that, but there's still a possibility that Victor Martinez is an effective DH, let's just put it that way, this season. And, you know, for his sake and for the Tigers' sake, I hope so, just because it would be nice to... especially for the young guys, to at least field a competitive team, even if the wins aren't there. There's nothing worse than just getting blown out all season, not being able to score any runs, spoiling, yeah, wasting good pitching performances. So we're going to hope Mr. Victor can get it done a little bit this year and at least kind of help out. Obviously, the other, you know, really impressive start has been Nick Castellanos, who just, you know, kind of seems like he's taken over as sort of the star leadership role of the team. He's leading the team in home runs. He's got a 111 OPS, so he's just been mashing left and right out there. And, you know, I'm expecting a very good season from him, so that's not really a surprise probably to either of us.
Yeah, no, he looks like he's going to be great, and I make fun of Nick a lot, but he is absolutely shaping up to be the star of the team. And I'm writing a piece on him right now, so... Well, I'm writing basically that based on the tone of the markets right now, that should the Tigers offer him another extension, because they did last season, just earlier this offseason, and he said no.
Or they say that's what happened. I'm not.
Yeah,
I don't know.
The claim is there. I mean, yeah. We have no evidence. We don't know what he was offered, if he was offered anything. But I'm taking the approach that should such an offer be made again, that he may be wise to take it.
Yeah, yeah. When you're kind of a no glove, you know, good hitter, you know, even though he's young, you know, the bucks just aren't there. I mean, we're seeing what really good hitters like, you know, Jay Bruce has got, and, you know, Neil Walker. I mean, obviously these guys are older, but, you know, if you're not like a slick defender or an absolutely dominant hitter, you're just not getting the money. And I'm not sure, yeah, Nick will be 27 when he hits free agency. So, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, the extension is going to have to be you know, substantial, because he is going to hit free agency when he's 27, and teams will probably pay for 5 years of Nick Castellanos as a massive power threat, which you would expect him to kind of develop into in the coming years. So we'll have to see. But yeah, I tend to agree with you. Like, he's kind of playing with fire there, especially if he can't go out there and play right field pretty effectively this year. He's going to be a man without a job.
I think the desire to have guys that are just quality hitters is going down compared to guys who can actually do both roles.
Yeah, it really does seem like there's a just a really strong emphasis on, you know, the five or at least four tool player and getting guys who don't really, you know, leave you a weakness anywhere. So we'll have to see how that goes. But yeah, you know, and then the other thing about that is that if I'm Tony Clark, the head of the Major League Baseball Players Association, I am calling everyone who is even a threat to it, sign an extension, and telling them to please God do not do it.
Yeah, but that kind of flies in the face of everything that major league teams are doing right now, which is you extend them young and you extend them cheap.
Yep, and that's the way you got to do it. And the Tigers should definitely be looking to do that with some people. They may have just missed the boat with Nick. You know, he's only got 2 years left. So we'll have to see. But I could see, like, if you really front-loaded that deal to where it's like, okay, instead of whatever he's making this year, 7, and then maybe 11 or 12 next year, like, all right, we're going to pay you, you know, $15 million a year the next two seasons, and then we'll go, you know, 12 per the next three or something like that. You know, you get that change up front, you know, and I believe Nick lives in Florida, so that's tax-free. So,
I think he's not a dumb kid. I think that you look at what the market is doing, and he's got to be watching what happened with JD Martinez and, you know, watching these other guys just languish. And I think a lot of what will happen will depend on, you know, A, if the Tigers make a decent offer, and B, if he thinks that he can, you know, milk the market. And I don't know that there is the kind of market for Nick that he thinks there might be.
And there's also, you know, what does he think about the Tigers, you know, future? Like, you know, how long does he really, when he takes a look at some of these guys he's playing with, does he kind of see, like, okay, you know, a couple years we might have enough of a core here where if they spend some money, we could be right back in the thick of things. So that's going to, you would assume, be part of his assessment as well. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, we're liking Nick. You know, I've liked what I've seen from Daniel Norris and Matt Boyd both. I've seen Liriano once, and he looked very Liriano-ish, like a little bit wild, a little bit too nibbly around the edges. But then, you know, when he needs it, he can punch some people out with that slider. So he's useful, absolutely. I'd kind of prefer to see him in the bullpen, but that's not going to happen, at least to start with. So those guys have been good. Ryan Carpenter of the he was a major league signing, but kind of the guys who haven't, you know, who's basically still a rookie, has been pretty impressive as a starter this spring as well, and has pitched some pretty good innings and struck out quite a few guys. So I'll be curious to see how he performs as kind of as depth there. So that's another one to kind of pay attention to, and whether or not he can produce something. I think I mentioned last week that he was kind of one of the Cato All-Stars last week, and someone kind of asked me to elaborate on that. And Cato, I can't remember who it's named for. It's a Japanese baseball player, basically. But the idea behind Cato is that instead of scouting with the eye test and metrics like spin rate and exit velocity, it's grading minor league players basically by their numbers at various levels and adjusting those by the league and the competition that they faced, and using that to kind of project which minor leaguers are likely to produce value in the next couple years. And the Tigers were clearly looking at that list, because guys like Mark Montgomery, Kevin Comer, and Ryan Carpenter were all pretty high up there. I believe it's Chris Stewart for Fangraphs who puts those out every year, those projections.
He did, but he'll no longer be doing them after this year. He got a real job.
Yep, that's what happens when you're good. So yeah, that's Cato, and that's kind of what the basis of that system is. So, you know, if you're wondering about the Tigers and their theoretically developing analytics department, I don't know what to say about that at this point until we see a little bit more, but at very least they read Chris Stewart's Cato article, which is probably progress. So
it's better than nothing, so we can at least see that as a positive light.
Yeah, we have a bunch of questions tonight, so I want to get to those pretty quick before we wrap it up. But one thing we should do this week and next week, like next week maybe we can do a National League kind of version of this, but for the American League, who are your division winners right now, and who do you like in the wild card? Let's just kind of go through and kind of take a look at what we think is going to happen this year.
Oh, Lord.
I mean, you got to like the Astros, obviously. In the
Yeah, the Astros are obviously your West choice. I still think the Indians have got it in the Central. Although I think the Twins are going to put up some good numbers and be interesting.
I do like that they got Lance Lynn, and I think Jose Berrios is on the verge of breaking out into one of the better starting pitchers in the game. So we'll see.
I think they would do well to trade Miguel Sano and see what they could get for him, but that's just me. And I feel like the Twins fans out there listening to this will be like, what the hell is she saying?
That's a bad, bad situation, yeah.
I feel like he was, their guy for the home run derby last year, and they love him, but I feel like now is the time to move him. And that's just my,
and I'm not
no hot take.
And I do wonder though, like if, I just don't know. Like if I was a team, I don't know if I want him either. We don't like to talk about this topic too much and get into anything that's like kind of beyond baseball if possible, but I'm just going to do it for a second. But, Miguel Sano deserves, from everything I've read, to be suspended, for at least a year. Like Major League Baseball needs to just like put the fucking hammer down on Miguel Sano right now. Sorry, Twins fans, but your boy is a scumbag, and he needs to be put away for a little while, and do whatever it takes to kind of rehabilitate his image, or at least kind of serve some kind of penance here before you're going to let him back out in a baseball field as an entertainer that people are theoretically supposed to pay you money to come see. So we'll see. I mean, this is kind of a test for Rob Manfred. I mean, he's run his mouth all off season about all kinds of, minor weird issues. This is serious, and this is the kind of thing where baseball hasn't done very well in the past. Is behind, quite a few of the other sports, actually. I won't say that about football because football has its own problems, but something's got to change in the way they deal with this kind of issue. You can go read about it yourself.
And especially in a situation where this wasn't like a home thing, this was somebody who worked with the team.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty, pretty bad and messed up thing that happened. So yeah, no, I agree with you, and yeah, we're not going to get too big into it, but I think you're right. A lot of teams may want to not go anywhere near that. But I think the Twins should be among them. And if you can move them for a team that doesn't care about that history and just wants pop in their bat. And the other thing is that, like, I mean, he was injured at the end of last season. He's not young, and he's kind of
young, but yeah, I know what you're saying. He hasn't really turned into the, the Aaron Judge type that people thought he might be.
So yeah, we'll see. Anyway, so I think the Twins will do something interesting this year, but I don't think it'll be enough to give them the season. I think that'll still go to the Indians, unless they manage to mess something up incredibly. I think in the East, you're probably looking at
This is where it gets tough.
Yankees?
Yeah, I'm going to say the Yankees, too. Although, yeah, it's just hard to say. Boston could definitely be a threat. So,
I feel like, and this is going to be Trey unpopular, that the wild card teams will be the Red Sox and the Rays. I still think they got it in them, and you can circle back to this at the end of the season and tell me how wrong I was. That's fine. But they are often a team that surprises and makes really strong pickups at the break. So I'm curious to see what they do.
I'd feel a little better about the Rays if they had Honeywell, like had that one extra starter back where they could kind of make a move, somewhere during the season and bring him up. Maybe move someone else if needed. I just have a hard time seeing him catch both. Yeah, I just can't see him catching Boston and New York both. I honestly kind of think Toronto is a bit of a sleeper in that division as well. They've made a couple savvy little moves. And, if their rotation is healthy, if Aaron Sanchez and Marcus Stroman can kind of get past some of the nagging issues, and Roberto Osuna as well, their closer, that's a pretty dangerous team too. So I think the Rays are going to have it tough. I'm definitely taking the Red Sox to take the first wild card spot, and I'm really tempted to take the Angels, except that they need to go sign Alex Cobb right now.
Oh my God, why is Alex Cobb still not have a job?
I don't know, but they should go sign Alex Cobb, and they should sign Greg Holland, because Billy Epler's done great work over there to rebuild their infield, getting Upton over there. He pieced together a bullpen out of like failed starters and broken down toys. It was pretty impressive, and I think he's got them in position where if things break right, they could take a wild card this year. But they need to really make a push because, you know, Mike Trout's not getting any younger. He's still, whatever, 25, 26. But, you know, you don't want to be waiting two or three more years before, like, you've got the pitching staff behind him to really support him. So I would really like to see them go and do that. I kind of thought they might be in play for Arrieta.
Yeah, it looks like Ohtani had a bit of a rough start in spring, too. So I feel like maybe you do bulk up a bit on that pitching, and it would be a smart choice for them.
Yeah, I definitely agree. You know, Ohtani as a hitter probably just isn't going to work out. Hitting major league pitching is tough enough without having never seen it before and then coming over and maybe, you know, getting a few at-bats a week. It's just really hard to see that working out. But as a pitcher, his stuff looks good. But again, I mean, there's just a lot of transition there. So I think, yeah, expecting him to come out and even be like a mid-rotation starter who's consistent for you might be asking a little bit too much.
Especially in your first season.
Yeah, I mean, he's capable of doing that for sure. I mean, the breaking ball and the splitter are just absolutely just dynamic. I mean, those are some nasty fucking pitches.
Breaking ball is disgusting. Ooh. It's so beautiful. Like, the break on it at the end. Like, if you find Pitching Ninja on Twitter.
Rob Friedman.
And find the gifts of it, because holy buckets, is it just gross.
Yeah.
Like, and speaking of, like, gross pitches, Justin Verlander has looked so good this spring.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he is Verlander of old, and he looks so good.
Yeah, he looks better than he did in October, which is freakish for him. He doesn't usually start seasons off going that hard, but whoa, he's looking good. But, yeah, the only thing I can compare Ohtani's breaking ball to is, like, Corey Kluber or Jose Fernandez's slider at their absolute best with that, like, frisbee break where, you know, the change of direction doesn't look like something a baseball should be capable of doing.
Looks edited. Like, the way it drops is just unbelievable. You just look at pitchers shake their, like, batters shake their heads after.
Yeah.
Because it's unhittable. Like,
it really is.
Insane, the drop on it. It's so beautiful.
Yep. And, you know, and the guy's throwing, you know, 98 to 100. So, I mean, you know, I've watched him enough and I've heard this from other people. Like, the fastball is pretty straight. But so he's probably going to have to kind of learn to use the fastball effectively in the major leagues. He's going to have to pitch inside. He's going to have to locate kind of up, down on both sides of the plate and not let people get comfortable, because they can hit 100 if it's straight, if they kind of have a sense of where it's coming and when it's coming. But yeah, the potential is there. But yeah, they need another pitcher over there in Los Angeles. They got to get something.
Got to watch a lot of Andrew Miller tape and learn how to paint those corners.
Yeah, yeah. Oof. That's another guy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, Andrew Miller. Man, I hate the Indians, but I love some of their players so much.
Yeah, they've also got one player that I really don't like, but but he's good, too. I mean, it's a talented staff. It's going to be interesting to see how that rotation and bullpen plays with Brian Shaw, who kind of held that deep bullpen together, gone. Danny Salazar has been injured this year, and they're going to be, you know, actually leaning on Mike Clevenger and Trevor Bauer this year, and Josh Tomlin, rather than just kind of like those guys kind of pitching in. They might need a little bit more from them this year. So, and Mickey Callaway has moved on to manage the Mets and become the gatekeeper of Thor's hammer. So, which is a good deal, I'm sure. I'm sure he's enjoying watching, you know, Noah Syndergaard pitch for him every day. But yeah, you know, I got to think the Cleveland Indians are still the team to beat. I like that the Twins got Lynn. Losing Irvin Santana kind of hurts them. And they still need something to break their way. So, do I want them as my second wildcard team? I think I'm going to take them just because I need to see the Angels sign one more pitcher, because I just think that rotation and bullpen is still pretty sketchy. And there isn't that much coming up behind it in the minor leagues. They've got just a metric crap ton of like solid outfield prospects and not that much else. So
there
isn't really going to be much help coming from the farm. So yeah, I'll take the Twins and the Red Sox to take the wild cards, and then, go Astros, Yankees, and Indians. And we'll see if that kind of reign of terror by those three teams can hold up for one more season.
I mean, I'd personally, like, if I had to pick, I'd love to see the Mariners take a wild card. Like, I would just, like, I want to see that scrappy little team do something. They've tried so hard.
They've done so many things.
I have so much feeling. Poor Jerry DePoto just does so many trades, and he just wants it so bad. I would love, like, I don't think they'll go anywhere beyond that, but I would love to see the Mariners get to that wild card. Like, the nice thing about knowing the Tigers aren't going to go there is that I can have these little pipe dreams about teams that I have a soft spot for.
Yeah. I know, it's like, kind of like you can indulge like some of your interest in other players. Yeah, that's how I feel too.
Yeah, I'd love to see the Mariners do a little something this year.
Yep, so would I, especially, you know, with Ichiro in there, you know, Felix kind of getting old. You know, Felix, I don't know if Felix Hernandez has ever pitched in the playoffs, and god damn, that's a crime. That's just a crime.
It would just be nice. It would be nice to have that, like, you know, movie perfect farewell season for Ichiro. Like, it's just a script waiting to happen, and I want to see it work out that way for them.
Yep, I would be happy to see that happen as well. Yeah, I don't expect it, but no. but they did. You know, there's
I'm romantic, but I'm also a realist.
I know. You know, it's like romanticism with like the lessons of age, unfortunately.
Yeah,
souring a note on everything, but yeah, so we'll see. Good luck, Mariners. Maybe you can get something done. I don't like the Rangers. I'm not interested. I think the Rangers pitching staff is by and large hot garbage, and I don't know, they're hanging on by a thread in my opinion.
I haven't forgiven the Rangers for 2011, and I never will, so
Yep, those monsters. Damn it, Ron Washington, how dare you.
I know. It was all Nelson Cruz's fault, but he is actually a really nice dude.
I know.
So it's my hatred for Cruz has burned off in the last year, but I still hate the Rangers.
I know. I hated him for a long time, too, and was still like, you know, PED suspension, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, he hasn't popped in like 5 years and has continued to just smash 30 to 40 home runs every single season with no problem. So obviously he didn't need the juice, whatever he was doing.
Can't stay mad at him for long.
I know. Okay, Nelson Cruz, you're back in the circle of trust.
You're forgiven.
All right, let's go to the podcast page where we ask for some listener questions. Our managing editor, Rob Rojacki, has one question for us that is nonsense. But we'll ask it anyway. Yeah, you did answer it. How long until Ron Gardner unplugs the computers? And what are the odds he breaks a toe kicking the damn thing? I don't have an answer for that, but I do think it's interesting that we've already kind of seen like these two sides of the Tigers coaching staff, where Chris Bosio, you know, has been in a very progressive organization in Chicago for the past 5 years, is used to having like all the latest technology, the latest information, the latest toys to play with. And he's kind of buttoned up against, you know, Mr. Old School himself, Ron Gardenhire. And it's going to be interesting to see how some of these decisions kind of shake out between the two of them with the pitching staff, because, you know, Gardy kind of has this, like, you know, deference to veterans kind of attitude where all you young guys all have to prove it. And Chris Bosio is much more of like a reasonable, you know, human being without all that nonsense. In my estimation. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll just see how it goes.
Kind of weird balance of it. Like, Gardy's kind of got that old school Sparky feel to him.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have the team that Sparky had, which is the problem.
Yeah, or Jim Leland had, for that matter.
Yeah, he's very much set in his way. So we'll see. Like you said, we've been seeing some interesting stuff with them wanting to see those different roles. But I think that a lot of that is Bosio.
Yeah.
So, we'll see how it plays out.
One thing I have noticed, and I've also seen, like, Chris Brown was kind of mentioning this the other day to me, too, is just that, you know, one thing that he's seen in Gardy is that he hasn't sacrificed Blunted hardly at all the spring training.
Yes.
And that might be a sign of progress, or it might just be spring training, so let these guys hit. I'm not real sure. We'll see how that goes. But in most other areas, I think some of the optimism that Ron Gardenhire had gone through some kind of, you know, road to Damascus level conversion to sabermetrics and analytics is probably mostly just PR to get the job, or for the Tigers to promote him when they got the job, because it seemed like the Tigers wanted him no matter what. By the time they signed him, they almost made it sound exactly how a lot of us would have suspected it was, which is just that it was kind of a foregone conclusion, and that his interviews were largely perfunctory, as were other candidates, and they were pretty much set on taking Gardy from the beginning. So,
yeah.
You know, at least, as we've been saying, at least he's likable. He gives some good quotes. He's probably going to drive us nuts.
So.
Yeah, he's probably going to drive us nuts a little bit. Oh, well.
But at least I think the nice thing is that he won't take himself nearly as seriously as Osmus did. So at least it'll be a little bit easier to stomach it when things go terribly wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, that might be. You know, he might. It might just make the medicine go down, because we're all due for some nasty tasting camphor oil,
whatever
it's called, castor oil. Excuse me, this season.
It's gonna be a bitter season.
Yeah. It's gonna be a season where interest in players trumps interest in team, which is not something we're very familiar with of late. So over the, well, over the last decade, really. So it's going to be a kind of different view of the Tigers, and the coverage that we provide is going to emphasize the minor leagues much more than it has in past years. So it's kind of all reflected in that. Let's see, Mr. Sunshine. I love Mr. Sunshine. Who's Sig says that he likes pie and he is a master of geology. So if you have geology needs, you can go to Mr. Sunshine. We were actually talking about that Rocky Mountains documentary that I brought up on the podcast last week, and he was schooling me on some things. That was cool. But he asks, who would you have as starters for the rotation and position players? I think we covered that. Is there any free agent left that you wish the Tigers would sign outside of Greg Holland, who we already kind of discussed a little bit last week? And that's a tough one. I wouldn't be mad if they signed Alex Cobb. I mean, that'd be fine with me.
I was just going to say that. I'm like, if they didn't care and he was willing to take a deal, I'd love to see them sign Alex Cobb. He's excellent. But, I mean, he's not going to be around for the length of time that they would need to be good. But he would make for some really watchable baseball this season.
Yep. And probably to some level, some trade bait. You know, all these teams who are like, oh, we don't need Alex Cobb right now, you know, in July, are going to be like, oh, hell yeah, we need Alex Cobb. So, yeah, you know, that could change. You know, the Tigers haven't really done anything in a market where there were all kinds of values to be had. You know, the Yankees picked up Neil Walker, who's been like a 2-3 war second baseman for like a freaking decade, for what was it, like $5 million?
$4 million and incentives. And today it came out, it wasn't that just Neil Walker was willing to take a cheaper deal because Yankees, it was that nobody offered him anything.
Yeah, which is just like, baffling.
It's insane to me. Like,
and he's such a perfect fit. He's such a perfect fit in New York too, because he's played, you know, he played for the Mets. He knows what to expect with the media and stuff. Like, that's just the rich getting so much richer this offseason.
So annoyed.
Giancarlo falls into their lap, and then, yeah, like, oh, we'll just pick up a solid second baseman for, you know, like, pocket money. Ugh.
So frustrated.
Yeah, I mean, other than that, you know, Carlos Gonzalez apparently has re-signed with the Rockies, so...
And that's a great example. I'm using that one when I talk about my Nick extension, in that the Rockies had offered him an early extension, which he declined to enter free agency. And now he's on, what, a $5 million, $6 million one-year deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and his original deal would have netted him something like $15 million a year.
Yeah. And, I'm not averse to the idea that the Tigers, you know, should kind of like tacitly just tank and not do a whole lot. But there's also the point of view that when there's that much value to be had, you know, you're really kind of screwing up to just let all these guys go by. Like, there's, you know, there's got to be somebody we could pick up here.
And for a team that is in a rebuild mode, I think getting those guys that could be July trade bait is more valuable in the immediate future than hoping for a draft pick that you might get if you tank effectively enough against seven other teams that are tanking.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I feel like they're so below the luxury tax threshold that why not spend a couple $1 million to pick up guys to make a fun first half season who can show their stuff? Is it like an extended showcase to other teams, and then move those guys at the July trade deadline? I don't understand why they're sitting on their hands.
I mean, you know, you were talking about, you know, intangibles earlier and how, you know, obviously some of the kind of things that baseball fans used to talk about in terms of intangibles have been, you know, cast to the wayside over the years, by just understanding a little bit more what the data tells us about, you know, how the game is actually played, what actually is meaningful. But you also see teams like the Cubs, the Astros. There are plenty of teams who will talk, you know, openly about, you know, trying to find guys who fit like their clubhouse, who play a style of baseball that they want their younger players to see. And so, you know, doing those things isn't a bad idea. None of these guys we're talking about is going to change, you know, the likelihood that the Tigers finish, you know, last or bottom five at minimum. So, you know, I mean, we've seen Adam Lind, who, you know, maybe could have been kind of a, you know, a part-time DH, part-time pinch hitter or something like that. He doesn't really fit here. You could have picked him up for the hell of it just to bring him into camp. He signed on just a minor league contract. The same thing was true for, and this is the one that really bothered me, was Tyler Clippard. Tyler Clippard has been a pretty damn good reliever for a long time and had a bad year last year. He gets a lot of fly balls, and he's definitely one of those guys who suffered a bit from the home run revolution. But you put him in Comerica Park, get him pitching away to where guys are driving, you know, their best, you know, their best hits to deep center field in Comerica Park. They're not leaving the park, and you've got Leonis Martin out there. That would have been a smart move, in my opinion, to pick him up and put him out there.
Yeah.
Right now, you know, Mike Fiers is, or Fiers is looking like that. Damn it!
Into your head.
Mike Fiers is kind of looking like a guy that, you know, I like the signing when they got it. There's a chance that he could prove a durable and useful starter. And I wouldn't take too much out of his spring training numbers to kind of say that he won't be that. But, you know, in retrospect, you know, it was hard to see the way the market was going to play out, but maybe they could have done substantially better by simply just chilling, which is kind of something that came up, you know, back when they signed Mike Pelfrey after the 2015 season, that had they just kind of waited the way they did with Justin Upton, and they paid, you know, full price for Justin Upton, but there were still a lot of other players available at that point that year that they kind of plugged in to be a fifth starter. And they kind of jumped the gun trying to, you know, beat people out. And you just kind of wonder, you know, it's just a little knock on the Tigers that maybe they're still kind of thinking in 2014, kind of 2015 terms rather than 2017, 2018 terms. So, you know, I don't really have any guys out there though, honestly, that I'm like, I'm sitting here like, you know, regretting and upset that the Tigers didn't pick up. There hasn't been a lot of point in it, and there hasn't really been anybody, you know, that would be desperately helpful. So, not going to worry about it too much. Let's see, the next question. What is Jacoby Jones' future from Fulmer FTW? Is he destined to play center field, or is he going to become a super utility guy? You also asked if he can play second base. He could play second base. He played shortstop in the minor leagues. He might not be a starting second baseman defensively, but he won't hurt himself there. What do you think about that? I kind of feel like unless he can hit much better than he has, he's probably going to end up in that super utility role at some point, kind of doing a lot of things, pinch running, filling in on the infield, playing center field for you when needed. But it's hard to see him as a starting center fielder unless he can cut down the strikeouts fairly substantially. And he's 25.
Unless he becomes a guy that they can use in a leadoff role, because this team loves putting center fielders in leadoff role.
Yeah, they want the speed there.
I don't know. I see the utility role working well for him if he can kind of hone those existing infield skills that he has, continue to do well in the outfield, that he becomes a really good utility guy for you. But yeah, I think you're right. If he can't improve his bat, that there's not a really solid future there for him as a starting center fielder.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you there. You know, obviously they'd like him to be a center fielder. And outside of Derek Hill, Jacoby Jones is probably the best center fielder in the entire organization. So he doesn't have to hit a lot. I'd be perfectly happy with, you know, Jacoby Jones, you know, being a league average bat who plays above average center field, runs the base as well. And I don't think that's out of the question.
He has to become league average. That's the problem.
Yep. And that mainly comes to the swing and miss. So it's been nice to see him draw walks and look like he's recognizing spin a little bit better this spring. But, you know, it's just really hard to kind of parse those spring training numbers because pitchers are out there throwing all curveballs because it's their worst pitch and they're working on it. Sometimes you just don't know. You know, you just don't know what the emphasis of the team you're competing against is at that point in the spring.
I think a lot of his problem last season was getting into his own head and trying way too hard. Like, you saw him really aggressive early, swinging on things. Like, it was a lot of really ugly at bats for him last season. So hopefully he maybe got over that and realized that he doesn't have to hit a 12-run home run every time he's at bat, you know,
yeah, right.
That sometimes just getting to first base is important. So maybe we'll see a little bit more maturity out of him this season, which would be nice.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it does bear in mind that, you know, you always look for these kind of, like, things outside of actual performance that might have affected them. And, I mean, he did get hit in the face, which can put some guys off their feet a little bit. He has kind of moved positions quite a bit since the Tigers got him. So, you know, those are the kind of things that kind of extend a guy's timeline a little bit for me. And, yeah, I haven't given up on Jacoby Jones as a starter yet, but that's going to be determined this year. Like, he's either going to going to come on and not strike out so much this year and put the ball in play. And as long as he does that, his speed's going to make it work, the speed and the power. So if he can do that, awesome. If he can't do that this year, then yeah, you're probably looking at a utility guy. And then the final question we'll answer tonight, about baseball anyway, is if this Tigers team wins 90 games, who gets more credit, Al Avila, Ron Gardenhire, or intense solar flares?
Solar flares.
Yeah.
Witchcraft.
Yeah, my first thought was Satan. Or possibly a chicken.
Who has gone missing and died recently that has been, like, a severed head at an altar. So there's no effing way the Tigers are winning 90 games this season.
I know, I mean, and obviously he realizes that, and he's cracking up when he says
it. No, I mean, this is the best question I've heard all night. Thank you. Who asked this?
Tim Bob Amote.
Amazing.
Yep, who is a good commenter. I've talked to him quite a few times. I'm trying to think, like, what it would take, besides, me drenched in blood, naked at midnight at the trade deadline, holding the headless chicken that I have just sacrificed to the Dark Ones.
Al would get the, he got lucky narrative, 100%. Gardy would get the, like, I think Bosio would get more, depending on how those wins were collected.
But it'll be Gardy. Everybody will be like, it's Gardy, all Gardy.
Would get the absolute nod for the success. Absolutely.
Osmus cost us two World Series. Like, that's what you'll hear. That's what would all come down to. I'm trying to wrap my head.
Tigers Twitter. I know exactly how this would go.
What? I'm just trying to think of what 90 games would even look like. Obviously, Miggy comes back and rakes. Nick has a monster year.
Victor has to be really healthy and have some speed.
Yeah, Matuk builds on last year. I mean, hits really well. Dixon and Jamer are good. 40
home run year.
Yeah, and then, Norris, Boyd, and Fulmer all have to have, 3.5 or below ERAs and pitch 180 innings. And Joe Jimenez turns out to be a stud.
Season from Fulmer.
Yep. You gotta have more bullpen, Green, I expect to be good.
Pick up Holland at the trade deadline. So you get that.
Oh, that's true. We could trade. That's true. We do have enough of a farm now. We could trade for a lot of good pieces at the deadline.
If they kept themselves in it. They're really high up. Yeah, this is how you build the 90-win Tigers, that you're just like, what, rebuild? And you just ditch everything you worked the entire offseason for and, bring in everybody that's still a free agent. But
I know. We're, trade for Manny Machado to take over at short, and then we trade Jake Rogers and Daz Cameron and Franklin Perez, and then probably, another piece to get Verlander back.
Crush my soul.
It is kind of funny to think about, though. I know, early in the season, you and I kind of tossed around some, like wild scenarios. Like, the Tigers have a farm system now. They could trade for all kinds of people. Like, what crazy moves would they have to make to make this a possibility this year? But it is not a possibility this year. So please abandon all hope, ye who enter here.
Yeah, sorry. If they win a 90-win season, it is because of some sort of pact with Satan.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It'll be proven. It'll be proven.
Somehow 28 other teams have vanished, and they are only playing the Padres for the rest of the year.
Yep. I'm trying, I don't know. All the arms on the Indians and Twins and, I don't know, White Sox, everybody just, blows out their elbow all spontaneously, and we just waltz in. I don't know. It's hard to even conceive of such a thing. But baseball is so weird that I know for a fact that the Tigers winning 90 games is not impossible. You can open Schrodinger's box at some point, and that's the result.
Season in there, yeah, absolutely. But it's supremely unlikely.
Supremely unlikely is a good way to put it. All right, I think that's enough. That's a good last question, because now we're just all punchy and our imaginations are running wild. Break it down for me. You said you had a couple good book recommendations.
Yeah, I think we do this every 2 weeks. You brought this up last time. I am reading three right now that are pretty solid. I'm doing the audiobook version of Trevor Noah's memoir, Born a Crime. Trevor Noah is the Daily Show host who took over for Jon Stewart. It's all about his childhood growing up in South Africa under apartheid, and about his unbelievably amazing mother. And it's fascinating. I'm about 25% of the way through it right now, and he reads it. He speaks in sections of 6 different African languages, and he's just absolutely incredible, incredible life. So I highly recommend that. I'm reading The Kalevala.
Yeah. Which
I just started. It is a Finnish epic poem, kind of in the same vein as like the Iliad or the Odyssey. So right now we're just kind of in the opening section where it's like the creation of all things. And it's pretty fast. Now, obviously not reading it in the original Finnish. I am reading a translated version, but I've had it sitting on my shelf for a while. And I keep meaning to read it, so I'm kind of taking it upon myself to do one section a night.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's divided into, like, smaller poems within the epic poem. So I've started reading that. I actually discovered this poem because of an art exhibit I saw several years ago by a photographer named Arno Raphael Minkinen, who's a Finnish photographer whose work I highly recommend anybody look up. He does self-portraits that he does without a timer, with a timer, but no Photoshop. Like, and it's astonishing to see the effects that he's created without using any kind of computer enhancement. So it'll be like, it'll be just his hand on something, or him folded into the scenery of a setting, or him just emerging from a lake. Like, they're really, really remarkable pieces. And he did a show once that was built around the Kalevala as an inspiration.
Oh, awesome.
So yeah, if you ever get a chance, look up Arno Raphael Minkinen's work. And I'm reading the Kalevala right now. And then the third one I'm reading is a book called All Be Gone in the Dark by Michelle McNamara, who was the late wife of comedian Patton Oswalt. And she ran a blog called True Crime Diary, or True Crime, something similar to that. And she became obsessed with the case of the Golden State Killer, who was actually the original Night Stalker before Richard Ramirez, I think.
Yeah.
He's now considered the Night Stalker.
Yep.
The name got kind of passed around a bit. And anyway, so it's her research and all of her work following the story of this this serial rapist who became a serial killer through the late 70s and early 80s. And I'd heard about the case on My Favorite Murder, which is an amazing podcast. And it really gets in depth on it. And unfortunately, she died before she could finish the book. So it's largely written by her and then pieced together with work from her editors and research assistants. And I'm halfway through it right now, and it's really deeply readable and really, really well done. You'll probably notice a theme as we do more of these that I do read a fair bit of true crime, but I find it very fascinating.
How can you not, if you're a mystery writer? So
Well, yeah, exactly. So it's always kind of tickled my fancy. So I like finding, writers that do it really well, that aren't like, they don't dive into like the really tawdry aspects of it, but they really build a human story and kind of pull you along with the whole thing. So I'd highly recommend all three of the books that I'm reading right now. Possibly not the Kalevala, unless you are into epic Finnish poetry.
Yeah. Or any kind of epic poetry. I mean, if you like,
you
know.
It's good so far, and it's not a complicated read. Like, yeah. It's not. It feels kind of like a mythology story told in fairly simple terms in poem. So it's not a really deep, it's not the hardest poetry I've read by any stretch.
Yeah, I mean, if you liked Beowulf, if you read, Homer, or, kind of anything along those lines, the Kalevala's worth checking out. I liked it. It's been a long time since I read it. I had to write a couple papers on it, actually, but that's been over 20 years. So yeah, I don't remember too much about it, but I do remember that it was a pretty enjoyable and interesting read. You had to kind of push yourself a little bit, but
this is a beastly tome.
Yeah.
Like, it is 700 pages long. It is exactly 666 pages long.
Oh, dang.
But yeah, I'm doing one a night, so it'll take me probably 2 months to finish, but at that point it won't have felt too like too much of a slog. What about you? What do you got on your pile?
You know, I haven't read that much in the past week. Just been kind of busy, like some personal stuff going on. But I started reading Patrick Rothfuss's The Name of the Wind, which a lot of people have told me is a fantasy series that a non-fantasy reader would get into. So that's been really good so far. About 90 pages into it, and I'm at the point of like knowing that I'm hooked. So that's been pretty good, and I'm looking forward to the fact that there's another book and hopefully a third book sometime in the semi near future, although my Game of Thrones experience tells me to be wary of that.
Well, I mean, Rothfuss, I think, may be a little bit more reliable. We'll see about it.
Like, he's younger. He's got less, like, you know, billion-dollar deals to administer or whatever the hell.
Yeah, he still goes to, like, normal people book signings. An author I know, Chloe Neal, was just at a book signing with him, like, last week. So that's kind of cool. Yeah, that one's been on my pile for a while, so let me know how it is.
Yeah, so far it's been pretty good. But I haven't really, you know, the only other thing I've been reading is The Cub's Way by Tom Verducci, he writes for Sports Illustrated, and that's sort of like the whole story of the Cubs rebuilding efforts all the way to the championship, and a lot of like the, you know, the theory that, you know, Joe Maddon, Chris Bosio, Theo Epstein, Jed Hoyer, that whole kind of unit brought to baseball as they came over from the Red Sox, where they'd kind of like pioneered a lot of things. So that's been pretty interesting. I read that earlier in the season. I'm just kind of rereading that to get ready to write some articles. And then the other thing I've got in my hands, which I haven't started yet, but I am going to make an effort to read, is Wolf in White Van by John Darnielle, who is the lead singer for the band The Mountain Goats and writes their lyrics. Fantastic lyricist. I'm not always such a huge fan of their music, but he's a really good songwriter, hell of a lyric writer. And so far, it's been pretty interesting, but I'm only a few pages into it. But I've had it recommended to me for like 2 years straight, and people badgering me to read it. So we're going to give that a try. But my reading has actually been kind of slack this week. So
I think that's allowed.
Yeah, once in a while, it's got to happen. So, all right, we're going to wrap it up tonight. This is a fairly long one. It happens when we get together. But, please follow Ashley at 90 Feet From Home on Twitter. You can follow me at Fiscadoro74 on Twitter. And you can also find us, if you are, as we mentioned earlier, if you're interested in donating to us, becoming a patron of the site and of the podcast, please go to our Patreon site at www.patreon.com/blessyourboys. And you can help us out there. We'll see you again next week. And I'm not sure what we have for you next week, but we'll figure something out. I think Emily's going to be in spring training, so we won't have her till the week after. Maybe we'll bring Rob on next week and mess around.
Yeah, some sort of story will emerge, I'm sure.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. So everybody have a good night. Ashley, have a great night. Thanks.
Good night.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.